Welcome to the Officer Media Group Roll Call Podcast. Officer Roll Call is meant to inform and entertain. Now, let's get into this episode.
Welcome to this episode of the Officer Roll Call Podcast. This is Paul Peluso, the editor of Officer Magazine. And as always, I'm joined by Frank Borelli, the editorial director of Officer Media Group. How's it going today, Frank?
Morning, Paul. Going pretty good. How are you?
Hey, great. So today we're going to talk about firearms and accessories, and which was the special section of the March-April issue of Officer Magazine, which will be out this week. It'll probably either get it in your mailbox if you subscribe to the magazine, and it's going to be online, digital, and also all the content will be on officer.com when you listen to this podcast. So make sure to head over to officer.com and check out the magazine. We're really proud of it, and there's a lot of really good firearms and accessories stuff in the issue, and especially, you know, a lot of stuff covering SHOT Show. So SHOT Show happened in January in Las Vegas, and I think we've talked a little bit on this podcast, Frank, about SHOT Show,
kind
of previewing SHOT Show and some of the stuff that was there, but we're going to specifically look at some of the firearms and some of the accessories that you saw and that our contributor Lindsay Berdeman saw as well. First, if you know, you just want to talk just a little bit, Frank, about SHOT Show and what you saw there and some of the advances in firearms.
So, you know, SHOT Show grows every year, and it amazes me. I've been going to it now, with the exception they canceled the one in 21. I've been to every SHOT Show since 2004. And it grew. I mean, back then it was in a different convention center, and now it got too big there, so they moved it to the Sands, and it got too big for the Sands, so they had to actually create space across in the Caesars Forums for it. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger. There's more to see every year, and it's really hard to find the highlights, I guess is the right word for it. But it was eventful. It was well attended. Thankfully there was no COVID restrictions or concerns. All that's well behind us. There's been a little bit of a change of flavor in that some of the bigger manufacturers don't even go to SHOT Show. They go to Vegas during the same week, and they have their own, they go to their own range, or they have their own event. I think Beretta and SIG both did that this year, but overall, really, if you're in the industry and you're a gun guy, or you're a armor person, or you're into knives, it's a show to go to.
So, Frank, you wrote an article for this issue of the magazine, Two Unique Firearms from SHOT Show. And basically, the tagline is that these two models stood out at the annual event. And you cover the Daniel Defense H9 and the Henry Repeating Arms Lever Action Supreme. Can you talk about each model and kind of why they stood out to you?
So, I've long been a fan of Henry Lever Action Rifles. Henry Rifles USA makes a great product, in my opinion. And a long time ago, in 2000, when the active shooter response wave hit the country, there was a lot of argument about patrol officers having AR-15 style rifles in their car. And my answer was, okay, then don't put a lever action rifle in every car. And people looked at me like I had two heads. And interestingly enough now, there are people coming out with lever action options for what we would call a patrol rifle caliber weapon, a 223 or 300 blackout. And I just realized there's a typo in the article I got to go fix. So the Henry Lever Action Supreme is a box fed lever action rifle. It actually uses your standard AR-15 M16 kind of magazine, and it'll hold it. They make it in both 223 and 300 blackout, both of them excellent calibers for active shooter response or patrol rifle work. And I think it's fantastic that they've done this. I think it's a great option for everybody out there that has any kind of political objections, or they're fighting a battle with politicians to get a good patrol rifle in the car. I think this is a great option. There's no way to look at a lever action rifle and say, oh, it's a weapon of war. It's just not, but it does the work. The Daniel Defense H9, so there's a background story on this where a different gentleman had designed what he thought was going to be a great handgun, and he didn't really have the wherewithal to bring it to reality and bring it to market. And Daniel Defense bought the designs, and they've revamped it. and come across and come out with this new weapon, that the Daniel Defense H9. Now, the cool part, excuse me, is that it has a grip frame angle of a 1911, a government model 1911, one of the oldest successful semi-automatic handguns in existence. But it's a double stack 9mm, which is kind of a industry standard for law enforcement now. So when you combine the two and all the modern design features that they put into it, with, you know, the slide already being cut for optics, the trigger is a straight pull trigger, but it still has that trigger safety, quote unquote, in it. It has a passive firing pin block in it. It has the Picatinny rail for mounting lights on it. It's got all the modern day stuff. It's got that grip angle that's just going to feel so good and look so familiar. And in profile, it looks truly unique. But it's going to, I think it's going to take the industry by storm. I think you're going to see this in a lot of duty holsters. Once they get to really pushing to the law enforcement market, they're pushing it out on the consumer side first and using that feedback to really refine it before they push it to LE. But I think it's going to go over real well. I like the gun a lot.
Great. And yeah, sticking with SHOT Show, Lindsey Burdeman had his article looking back on SHOT Show 2024, and he touches on a ton of different accessories and firearms that were featured there. And so make sure that you guys check out the magazine and also online. Lots of good photos, as always. Lindsey always provides really good images to go along with his reviews. And so he did touch on the Henry Lever Action Supreme as well. And also, yeah, so he touched on that one, but a lot of other stuff too. If you want to kind of touch on a couple of these, Frank, the Kel-Tec P50 Defender, the
let's just rock through them real quick here.
Yeah,
so
let's go through
from the top. I mean, he started out talking about Beretta, and if people look at the article, they'll see pictures of him with the Beretta competition team, which is always a cool photo op, right? And he talks about the Beretta Model 92 variants. Yep. Which was kind of standard. That was the military M9 for a long time. And now we've got the 92 and all the different variants. And he talks about one of the ones he saw there, but he talks about stuff that other people don't talk about in law enforcement, like a 32 auto, the Tomcat, the Beretta Tomcat. Who the heck shoots a 32 auto these days? Excuse me. In law enforcement, that's maybe a pocket gun. It's maybe a backup gun, but there's still a valid use out there for it. Now they're Beretta's calling it the 30X. So there's information in there about that. Ernie Langdon is a well-known competitive shooter and trainer, prior service Marine. And he now owns and operates Langdon Tactical. He works very closely with Beretta, and they have combined to put out the Beretta LTT 1301, which is, you know, a shotgun you can't touch for quality anywhere else. I think it's funny that he and I agree the lever action is a viable gun for law enforcement when he talks about the Henry. And that's how he leads into talking about the Henry. By the way, Frank and I agree on this. Smith & Wesson, of all people, coming out with a lever action for the first time in forever. If they ever have before, I don't know. But in 44 Magnum. Now, that's a good duty gun. A lever action in 44 Magnums going to give you good range, good energy delivery. But it's not a caliber that is even really a rifle caliber per se. So you're not going to get a lot of pushback on it. He talks about the Kel-Tec P50 Defender. Excellent weapon in 5.7x28. A lot of the same features that the original FN P90 had, but the Kel-Tec P50 being slightly different in design features, with a 10-inch barrel. They do make a 16.5-inch model, which requires a little bit more room to maneuver. The 10 inch is a little bit healthier, a little bit handier in close quarter situations, room clearing, building searches, stuff like that. So I think that's where he stopped with the, well, no.
But yeah, he also has the Ruger and the Smith and Wesson in there. Yeah.
Paul, what you got, bud? Go ahead.
Yeah, oh, I was just saying, Frank, that yeah, he covered the Ruger LC-45 carbine and the Smith & Wesson M&P FPC carbine as well.
Yeah, I get to the part in his article where he's talking about the 511 XVI collection, or excuse me, VXI collection, which we've done a review on in the past. We did an Officer Labs of that 511 uniform set, and he speaks about that a little bit. And then, you know, Case Knives is a really well-known name in the industry, and they've got very specifically a line now of duty knives for law enforcement, military. It's about five knives. If I'm not wrong, they're all Tanto style blades, but they're a liner lock flip open, really quality blades from a well-known company, but Case isn't usually what people think about when they think law enforcement or duty blades. They really need to give them a look.
So the last article we'll cover, Frank, that you wrote for this, Firearms and Accessories special section for the March-April issue of Officer Magazine is, are weapon duty mounted lights becoming mandatory? That you talk about, you know, the need to mount lights on guns and especially handguns. And you know, you have photos here that you provided with some Streamlight lights mounted to your firearms. And I think we had Streamlight sent along some photos too that we had of their mounted lights. If you could talk a little bit about the benefits of mounted lights, some of the pushback there's been in the past, and if more departments are using them now.
So I think it goes without saying more departments are using them now. I mean, I know agencies where they issue, and in fact, LAPD is one of the biggest ones, and they're doing this. You know, they're issuing a holster and a weapon with an optic on it, but the holster will hold a weapon mounted duty light. There's lots of agencies here in Maryland where they're either being issued or they are authorized and the officers are doing it on their own. Lord knows every modern manufactured weapon comes with a Picatinny rail so that you can put a weapon mounted light on it. The pros and cons of it is where you get into the argument, right? I've been a low light instructor for about 23 years now. And one of the things I've learned in all of the low light engagements is that people shoot at what they can see. So if you're in a dark situation, a low light situation, and you've got a light on the end of your gun, and then the gun's out in front of your face, that puts the light in front of your face, and the bad guys shoot at the light. That means incoming rounds towards your face. I'm not a fan. I think that if the average patrol guy is going to have a light on his handgun, there ought to be a lot of requisite training that goes with it. I've seen people use a duty handgun mounted weapon light as a flashlight while somebody changed a tire. Now think about that. That means you got your gun in your hand pointed at this person or the workspace while they change a tire. Why? Wait, that's just silly. Beyond that, it's the liability of it's terrible. I think that, you know, there are some situations that it's very necessary and can come in. I mean, SWAT cops, you know, people with a barricade, canine officers, if you only have one hand to hold your weapon and your flashlight with, then it makes 100% sense to put the light on the gun. But if you've got free hands, why would you want to have that light on your gun as your only option or as your primary illumination device? That, to me, that's just asking for trouble. Now that said, the picture that accompanies the article, it's three of my handguns and every one of them has a light on it. Two of them, it's just the light. One of them, I have an optic and a light. On the third one, I have an optic and a light that also will project a laser that I don't use. It's just the TLR6 on a Glock 43. I can't get another light for that gun that doesn't have a laser. So I just set it up so it doesn't use the laser. Bearing in mind that is would purely be a home defense weapon. So that's why I have a light on it. I would be using it as a searchlight in my home. I think that's different than searching buildings and other stuff. But hey, look, lots of experts have different outlooks on this, and a lot of them have more experience than I do. So it's my opinion is definitely not the end all be all.
Yeah, I think this is a pretty good discussion on some of the content, the firearms accessories content that we're going to have in the magazine, Frank. And is there anything you wanted to add? Anything special you saw there at SHOT Show people should know about?
Not off the top of my head, Paul. You know, we've covered it fairly extensively, and certainly Lindsay did. Every year, things come out different, and we try to get them the coverage. But it's a challenge. It's a challenge, and there's so many things. If you asked me to just start listening to the cool stuff I saw, we'd still be talking next week.
Yeah. Great. Well, I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in to this episode of the Officer Roll Call Podcast. make sure to, you know, if you have any suggestions for us or anything, reach out at editors@officer.com. That's editors@officer.com. And thanks again for joining us, and stay safe and take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Officer Roll Call. Be sure to check back every 2 weeks for a new episode. Stay safe.